This is Matt Whitecross from the movie Road to Guantanamo, and he's here today to talk with us. And I have a couple of questions. First of all, have you heard from Tipton 3 at all today?
I have actually. We spent the day together. So the next thing you're looking to do is to come back from Christmas Town and doing interviews with everything
to come back. Let me start with, so the Tipton 3 were released in March of 2004, so here we are, only a little over 2 years later. The movie's all complete and done. How did you meet up with them, and how did the movie project get started?
What happened was we were working on a film called Nine Songs, which Michael was there a few years back, and we were just in the final process of editing it, and he was about to start making another film about football called Goal. And we were just talking generally about the work, and it was a couple of days after the Tipton 3 had been released. And we were talking about this story. It seemed like an absolutely amazing, incredible story that needed to be turned into a film. And Michael's normally very spontaneous about this kind of thing, and he just said, well, you know, if you're that keen, so let's do the film together and let's give them a ring tomorrow. And the next day we called the lawyers, and they agreed to meet up.
Did you have a hard time convincing him to go ahead and make the movie?
I don't know whether we had a hard time convincing them. I mean, really, that's a question for them, I guess. They thought about it. They just need to think about it for a couple of months. And then they came back, but there was no kind of negotiation. It was just really, do you want to make the film or not? And when they came back, that was it.
Right. I read that you spent, I think it was a month interviewing them so that you could come up with a script.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what happened was we went to their place in Oxford, which is where I'm from originally. And we just lived there. It was like a student flat share for about a month. But every morning we'd get up, we'd sit down for about 2 or 3 hours, do an interview, and we'd go all the way back to living in Tipton, what it was like to be a British Muslim, what it was like to grow up in that area, and just about then, just so I could get to know them. And gradually we kind of talked and talked and then got on to the story, and eventually kind of ended up in Guantanamo and kind of talked a little bit about the repercussions, which is not something that we really go into that much in the film. But you know, it was just kind of as much as we could, and as much as we could. It was a pretty exhaustive experience. I think we really kind of, by the end, we knew exactly what they were wearing, every single day of their trip, we knew how long their hair was, who they met, all this kind of thing. And we compiled that to about a 700-page document, which I cut down, and then we used that to try and get financing for the film.
You said that you didn't really talk about the repercussions too much in the movie. What do you mean by repercussions?
Well, one of the things that you find out as soon as you meet the Tipton 3 is that they kind of reluctant to admit that they've been kind of affected too much by their experience. And, I think the amazing thing for most people when they meet them is just that they're very, very normal, down-to-earth, ordinary people. So, normally when you ask them about, you know, how have you been traumatized by their experience, they can say no. And I think part of it is that they were there together, whereas a lot of other people, you know, were there isolated, they were individuals, but they spent their time there. It was three of them. So I know they were kind of young, which I think helps a lot. So talking to them about it, they're normally kind of reluctant to say that it didn't affect them. We go into it a little bit in the film, but really all the kind of aftermath, they're coming back, meeting their families, their time after, after meeting their boys, the court cases and stuff, it's not something that we really felt was necessary in the film. It seemed like the best point to end it was really on the finishing on the wedding, which is how the film should have started.
I don't see how you couldn't be traumatized by what they went through. I mean, I was traumatized by just watching the movie in the theater. Some of the treatment was so brutal that I was having a hard time dealing with it just sitting in a theater. So I can understand that they must be traumatized and perhaps they don't want to talk too much about it.
From my point of view as well, I really feel that anyone who goes through that kind of process, it's inevitable that there'll be repercussions. You'll be very traumatized and you have another kind of experience like that. So, as I said, what was great about them is they really felt like they didn't want to kind of play that up too much. They weren't trying to, they don't like to be portrayed as victims, and they also didn't really want to kind of, they didn't really feel as if they somehow their captain who had won, I think when you talk to them now, they can talk about any kind of victims they feel. They actually, it's much less than you would imagine, and it's definitely not directed towards, any kind of American public, it's much more towards the government.
What locations did you use for the filming of Afghanistan and also for the shots of inside of Guantanamo prison?
We shot all the scenes in England and Pakistan. We shot on locations exactly where we could say they are. Once we got to Afghanistan, you feel in the beginning of their trip, as far as Cardinal. But past that point, you can talk to the professors who were traveling with us, and they said it was getting very kind of difficult after that point. Because a lot of the people who committed to the atrocities that we detail in the film are actually now politicians and now in charge of their state. But what happened was we kind of went back to England, we regrouped, and then we went over and shot in Iran. So all the sequences with the Northern Alliance in Afghanistan, and all the sequences with Guantanamo Bay are shot in Iran.
Did you have a hard time getting permits in order to go in and do that kind of shooting for the movie? Did they want to see the script or know anything about what it was about?
We've shot in Iran before, in another film called In This World, which Michael made in 2002. And it's a very bureaucratic system, so it's kind of quite a lengthy process. But they didn't have to see the script, as they hadn't done it, on In This World. I think the main thing is they need to kind of do background checks on everyone, maybe to kind of make sure that we're actually going for the reasons we're going. But as long as you're not making a film about Iran, then they don't really have any kind of problems. So once we got there, we didn't have any problem at all, and we actually ended up filming on a military base for the sequences in Guantanamo.
Another question I had is about the actors who played the soldiers. They were so convincing. Were any of them ex-military?
There were quite a few people that we had over there who were ex-military. And they were both in the kind of interior team and the experiences that were shot in Iraq. They were, keen to show them the kind of techniques and so on, restraining people and just the patrolling areas. So we tried to get everything as authentic as possible. And for the most part, the filming, we had the teaching crew were there to kind of try and describe this exactly, how things were when they were there, whether it was creating the kind of the scenery of the locations or whether it was talking to the actors about kind of, handcuffing prisoners. We need to be sure that we get everything as closely in detail as possible, so that, the thing afterwards when we were talking to kind of journalists and stuff, the public knew that we were sure that we were getting the effects of the air.
This is the kind of movie where you really didn't have to over-dramatize or add things just to make it more interesting. I guess most of the stuff that's in that movie is what actually happened the way it happened.
Absolutely. We didn't dramatize anything. We really just tried to recreate events and sequences. I mean, there was so much that happened over the course of 2.5 years in Guantanamo and then before that in Afghanistan. It was really trying to select moments that seemed kind of truth to us. And, I think there's a lot of people have kind of criticized us for saying that the people weren't brutal enough, and other people have criticized us for saying they were too brutal. The point was we were trying to approximate what it felt like, so the audience can get an idea of what it felt like to be there for 2.5 years. And, some of the prisoners, some of the guards were treated them okay, but by far the majority of the US guards treated them very badly, so we had to get that kind of perspective right.
I've been having some debates on my website since I wrote the story with people over here who don't believe that the story could be as brutal as it is, mostly Republicans and Bush supporters, if there's still any of those around that actually exist. I actually was trying to convince people that this all actually happened, and I was having a hard time. So when they hear this interview, now they're going to know right from the source that this is all authentic.
Yeah, if there were only one or two accounts coming out of Guantanamo that were saying, talking about these abuses, then it would be fair enough for people to kind of criticize them. What happened was, as the first accounts came from prisoners, they left Guantanamo as the first or released, then initially the policy by the US administration was to deny everything. Then as gradually as more accounts came out, and other accounts were kind of linked to people in the CIA and from the Department of Defense, then they gradually start saying, well, okay, these do happen, but they're not as bad as these guys are saying. But I think gradually now, it's kind of obvious from the evidence, corroborating the evidence, whether it comes from within the administration or within the army or whether it comes from prisoners, that exactly these abuses that we detail in the film are actually true, and far worse things happen to other people. The problem is that we could only show the things that these guys have either experienced or witnessed, that there are far worse abuses going on and presumably still going on in Guantanamo, which we didn't want to show in the film because we were voting only to show things that we could corroborate.
So the release date here is on the 23rd of this month, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And what about over there in England? Has it already been shown, or is it going to be released there at the same time?
We showed the film for the first time on terrestrial TV on 4, what happened was we got the financing in kind of a weird way. Normally, what would might happen on a kind of feature film is you'd get the financing from various different bodies, but Sanford agreed to just to finance the film by themselves, which is great because we could just go out and make the film immediately. And I think, you know, we've definitely sensed the kind of time pressure. We wanted to show the film as quickly as possible, try and get the message out as quickly as possible. So we screened the first time on terrestrial TV, and the day after we released it on out throughout the UK in cinemas and then on DVD and also as a download on the internet.
What kind of distribution are you going to have here in the United States? I'm sure it'll be playing in large cities like LA, New York, and Chicago, but what about outside of that?
That's a good question, actually. I'm not 100% sure. Our distributors are here at the moment, but I think that's a question for them because I know that it is supposed to be. They're trying to get as wide distribution as possible, but inevitably, there's only certain kinds of theaters which show documentaries and art house films. So I think, you know, you're always going to be slightly limited. But you know, our attention is to go to the biggest audience possible, and especially, you know, for us, I think the US audience is the most important audience in the world, really, because it's only the US public which you can actually do anything about Guantanamo, which can actually campaign to get it closed.
And things, these kind of movies, usually they'll be shown in the big cities where the people are already sympathetic to what's going on, but in the places where it really needs to be seen, where people need to be educated about what's happening in the smaller towns, sometimes you don't get as much coverage there unless it's like a wide release where it's going to be in every theater and, you know, in every town.
No, I know what you mean. I know it is very difficult, especially when you're doing a subject matter like this and when you're doing a performance documentary. It's only now that people are, you know, through the films of Michael Moore and so on, that people are starting to see more documentaries and realize that, you know, that's just as bad as the film before they do anything else. But I think, generally speaking, there's a problem. There's not really the infrastructure to show these kind of films to people unless it's on TV. We want to put as many people as possible to see it. But inevitably, you're kind of scuppered by, you know, the fact is that I assume most chains won't show the film.
When the DVD finally comes out, that would be one way where hopefully it'll get out to all the video stores in the United States and people anywhere can get a chance to see it.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, you know, what we experimented with over in Britain was having a download system. It was the same day that it was released in cinemas. It was released to people to download on their computers. And that's something that I know that C-15 Soderbergh was trying to do in the U.S., and I'm sure, you know, that's something now that they're doing with King Kong over here as well, is now available to download. I think it took about 4 hours or something to download, but who knows, I'm sure that's the future of filmmaking, where, you know, for better or for worse, people are going to want to download these things and see them at home. And I think what I'd like to think is that, you know, in the future, smaller films, independent films like this, will be a better viewing, and they will actually, you know, going to get to an audience that otherwise would have been safe, you know, if you just download it and watch it the next day.
I had another question that I wanted to ask the Tipton 3, but they're not there. And I know that since you interviewed them extensively, you may know more about this. One of the things I was a little unclear about in the movie was exactly why they went to Afghanistan in the first place.
Well, what happened, what they told us, was that they were in Pakistan anyway, waiting to do this. They were in Pakistan waiting for wedding. And they weren't looking on not in wedding anyway. This is an arranged marriage. It was something that the defendants being forced on them. So what Asad asked for was a little bit of time off before his wedding, kind of like a stag do. So they went back to Karachi where he met the emissary, and they stayed there for a few days. And they went to a mosque, and when they were in the mosque, the people were saying they were going over to Afghanistan, and was part of a convoy going over there to help people. And I think, I mean, you know, who knows what anyone's motivations were, but I think having spent time with them was so interesting. Their motivation was going over there out of a pure sense of adventure. Now, if they could help people in the way, it'd been great, but it was a chance to see another country. It was a chance to go and see a place that, you know, you only heard about on the news, that people talked about, you know, hushed tones, and this was an incredible place that, you know, no one would really normally get a chance to go and see. They were supposed to go over there for a couple of days, and, you know, 2 years later, they moved from Guantanamo. But once they got over the border, you know, they're taken out of their hands. Having spent, you know, some time around the area, I kind of noticed that the border is completely porous. People commute the same way that people might commute into central New York or central London. People commute daily in and out of Afghanistan, you know, because there's no tax in Afghanistan, for example. So people go over there, and one of the actors in our film was the guy who goes to cut. He used to do that all the time to go and buy a spare car park.
So what's your next project? Are you going to be working with Michael Winterbottom again? And what, do you have any idea what you're going to be doing next?
No, I mean, this is a one-off. So, we've worked together and this is great. So Michael's already put his next couple of films really set up. But he might be going back to Pakistan to shoot. And he's got another film, I think he might be shooting in Italy. I've just finished a script this week, which I'm taking around different financial centers in England. We're going to see Channel 4, see if anyone gives me money to do that. What's been great about working with Revolution with Michael and Andrew is that they have no kind of sense. My thing is, I did, you can go out and just make a film, you know, even if all the money's there, or even if you actually necessarily want to just go out and shoot the film and move on to the next one. And, you know, that's what I'm hoping to do with this. So if all the money doesn't come through them, I'll just kind of move on and go through it, you know, with the same crew that we've worked for maybe on this film, with some of the actors that we've used, and just go out and film.
Did they talk about any interaction that they had with other prisoners in Guantanamo and what they were like and anything that they learned about them?
That was very interesting about talking to them. And also, I mean, they've since been kind of leaked to us from CIA and FBI, like, who were in Guantanamo themselves, is that a lot of the prisoners were, you know, they were literally just pissed off because there were bounties on foreigners in Afghanistan and in Pakistan at the time. So a lot of people were just there and had no kind of connection to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. But the other people who were there in Pakistan were at very best good soldiers for the Taliban. This is what some of the camp people say. And that's what the three seem to find. But most of the people they met were really, you know, kind of those coders as to why they were there as them. Now, obviously, there are very dangerous people in the world and they're, you know, terrorists. And what the CIA seem to be saying, you kind of leaked accounts, is that they're kind of ghost detainees in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. They're all these kind of ghost detention centers. So that no one knows where they are. No one knows who is in them. And, you know, that tunnel was set up in a very visible place for all these scapegoats. So the authorities can kind of say, they've done something about 9/11. You've found the guilty parties. And actually, in fact, these people, most of them, were very best, very low-level Taliban.
That's exactly what it seemed like to me. Also, I always wonder if these people are guilty and they know it, why have they been sitting in that cell for 3 years without charges, and when will they ever be charged, and why can't they talk to lawyers? It just seems that the United States is just trying to say, okay, look, we did something here, and we've got these guys, so we're on the job, but I don't know if that's really true or not.
There's only book recently that Free Time Bailers and lawyers actually, you know, taking the US authorities to court. But lawyers have finally had access to some of these people in Guantanamo. You know, they've normally just been given military lawyers, and they've been tried in these, they've been given kind of these trials in which the general public in the last couple of years, there's no transparency, so no one knows exactly why they're there, who's there. That's the problem. So I think, the fact is, no matter what they've done, people in Guantanamo should not be there. They should be, even terrorists should not be in a place like Guantanamo Bay. There needs to be a transparency there. But the sad thing is that it seems now, as we discover more and more about what's going on there, that half the people there are innocent anyway.
Right, that's exactly what I thought. Do you know anything about any updates about the court case that they're now involved in? I guess they were allowed to go ahead and sue the U.S. government by a court decision that was recently made?
Well, as far as I understand, there's two separate court cases. There's the original one, which was resolved versus Bush, and that was to try and enable detainees to actually see lawyers, to actually get some kind of legal representation. But the second one, and that went through, and they won that case, and that's... I think they think that may be one of the reasons that they were actually released. But now that some people do actually have legal access, now there's a second one that's going on, which is a civil case, which is resolved versus Rumsfeld. And I think the idea is that they're suing them and they're trying to get some reparations for their time in Guantanamo.
Do you know how much their release was a result of pressure from the British government? Because I remember reading about that in the news, but it didn't really go into it too much in the film.
I mean, it may well be after the campaign behind the scenes, that's the reason that it's got the release. It may be the British government did pull strings behind the scenes, but we will never know. It seems more likely that because of campaigning behind the scenes by the guy's lawyers, that eventually the British government was embarrassed enough that they campaigned that's the problem is no one knows. No one will ever know. There's never been any explanation why these guys were picked up in the first place, and no explanation why they were released. Then, when they were released, Tony Blair was interviewed on Sky TV, and the interviewer said, these guys are in the hell that they've been released. If they're guilty, why are we watching them? So the 63 now exists in a kind of limbo where they've been told they're innocent, but at the same time they're being spied on by the security system. It's a crazy way to resist.
Really, really is. Like I said, I was very impressed with the movie, the way it was shot. I love the grainy footage out in the desert. I thought that was, it just lended itself so well to the scene. Was that like intentional, or is that just the film that you used? How did that come about?
What happened was we shot on DV, on DV cameras.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I mean, most of the time we were there. But, you know, you're shooting, especially when you're shooting them on people like in Pakistan and Iran, it's very difficult to actually film in that kind of environment, even when you can kind of control it. You know, there's people always looking at the camera, there's people, it's very, very difficult to try and get into that environment, even with a small crew. What we found was, in this world, we found the shooting with DV was the easiest way to try and get into that kind of place. We graded over a physical pepper in England, and Mark was grading since in this world, I think. But, I had a great experience on it, and we kind of sat down and talked to them about the moves and kind of put it everything from stage, trying to get a different feel after
Well, I don't have any more questions for you. If you have anything you'd like to add, any statements you'd like to make, then we'll be wrapping it up.
Well, I guess I've surfaced a couple of times. I got asked when we were in Berlin, what exactly was attractive to the story in the first place. I kind of think that's kind of what it was. It was that kind of war. When the military dictator took over in 76, and they were imprisoned for 6 months. And I remember talking to people in England about it, and no one could really believe that people would be imprisoned without reason. No one could really believe people in prison might not be guilty. And I think Stephanie told me at that time that, you know, people in prison are necessarily guilty. They're terrible people. And it's so important for there to be transparency. There needs to be a system. There always needs to be legal recourse. Meeting the 63 and finding out how normal they were. After they've been traded to the trade, you know, in the US and in the UK media as monsters, as animals. It really kind of opened my eyes to what's going on in the world right now. And I think it's important that people listen to campaign groups like Amnesty International. You know, they wouldn't be here without Amnesty. They campaigned to release my parents, so my parents might have disappeared, like 10,000 other people in Argentina at the time. So I think, you know, anyone who meets the 63, Within minutes of spending time with them, you realize how normal, straightforward people they are. And it's hopefully, if nothing else, the film will kind of show the fairness of the Guantanamo Bay is in a terrible place to close down.
All right, thank you. We've been talking with Matt Whitecross, one of the directors of the movie The Road to Guantanamo, which opens in theaters in the U.S. on the 23rd. Thanks for being here, Matt.
Thanks very much.
All right.